I call Senate Resources Committee to order. Today is Monday, March 14th, 2016. Let the record reflect the time is 3:47 p.m. We're here in Juneau in the Capitol Building. Committee members present today, Senator Coghill and myself, Senator Giesel. We do not yet have a quorum, but I expect we will as the meeting goes on. We have just adjourned, pardon me, from Senate floor session all day. Thank you so much to Ann and Cody, who are helping us out today on the secretary duties, keeping the records, and the audio. Today, the committee is going to take up two items. First, we're going to have an overview of the Alaska Oil and Gas Conservation Commission. Welcome, Senator Costello. Thanks for joining us. After that, we have a bill to hear, that's Senate Bill 163. So, first of all, the Alaska Oil and Gas Conservation Commission, otherwise known as AOGCC, is the state's gatekeeper of our hydrocarbon resources. It has been in existence since before statehood, and they are a very critical regulatory agency. So today on the phone, again saving travel costs, is Commissioner Kathy Forrester, who is the chair of the commission. So Commissioner, thank you so much for presenting to us today over the phone. My staff person, Emmy Van Wy, will be at the computer moving slides for you, so if you would just call out the slide that you are referencing. Also, Commissioner, I know you are aware that we're having a late start today, so I would ask that it be a high-level overview. Thanks so much for joining us, Commissioner.
Well, you're welcome, and thank you for asking me.
I'll let you go ahead and begin the presentation after you introduce yourself for the record.
Okay. My name is Kathy Forrester, and I am the chair of the Alaska Oil and Gas Conservation Commission. Good afternoon, Chair Giesel, Vice Chair Costello, and Senator Coghill.
Senator Stoltz has just joined us. Welcome, Senator Stoltz.
And Senator Stoltz. Thank you very much for allowing me to come and talk before you. You guys know what I do, and you have my packet before me, so I'll just give you a very brief review of what we do. We are responsible for ensuring protection of fresh groundwater, protection of correlative rights, greater ultimate hydrocarbon recovery, protection of human health and safety in the operations we oversee, and prevention of hydrocarbon waste. And by statute, we have three commissioners. One must be a petroleum geologist. That seat is currently filled by Dan Seamount. One must be a petroleum engineer, and I'm filling that seat. The third person must have training and experience relevant to the oil and gas industry, and that seat has been vacant for about a year. We do a lot of, let me turn to the next page, and that's a picture of our office. It's downtown Anchorage, and you guys are always welcome here. We love to have you guys come and visit, and we look forward to answering any questions you have whenever you call with questions. They're always really smart questions. People often get us confused with DNR, but our duties are very, very different from DNR. DNR serves as the state's landowner representative, and their job is to ensure that the state's resources are developed for the maximum benefit of the state. AOGCC regulates the industry everywhere throughout the state to encourage to do those five things that I mentioned earlier. We give the state no greater standing than anybody else because sometimes they have to come before us in adjudications. And also for that reason, we're an independent agency. Once the governor appoints a commissioner, he can only remove us for cause so that we don't have to worry about making our decisions in a way that's going to make him happy. And that's really important when DNR is on one side of the table and somebody else is on the other. It gives us credibility. I'll switch to slide number 3, that's 2015 major activities and issues.
Commissioner Forrester, I want to welcome Senator Stedman for joining us. Thanks for joining us. And on that slide showing your office, several people wondered if perhaps you were a branch of Nordstrom's.
No, we sit in their shadow. We're a one-story building and Nordstrom's is behind us.
Thank you.
All right, and so on slide 3, 2015 major activities and issues. our biggest activities in 2015 were providing adequate regulatory oversight for all the activities in Cook Inlet and the North Slope, and occasionally in other remote, more remote areas. And that was with new operators and changes of operator. We had quite an active year in 2015, so that kept us pretty darn busy. Another important thing was taking advantage of the industry downturn to fill our critical vacancies. Implementing hydraulic fracturing regulations and subjecting them to federal review, working with the BLM on legacy well cleanup, and as you guys are aware, providing a gas offtake allowable for Prudhoe Bay and Point Thompson for major North Slope gas sales. I'll hit a little more detail on each of those. The next slide, drilling and well work. Although Cook Inlet activity slowed, North Slope activity remained high. BP and Conoco continued their workovers and drillings, and Hillcorp took over operatorship of Milne Point and took 50% ownership. They got busy fixing lots of broken wells there. And I've told you guys before, I had a lot of mixed emotions about all the activity. I'm glad it's happening, but it's certainly taking a lot of our time to assure that it's done right. In 2016, with continuing low oil prices, we've seen a slowdown in our new exploration activity, but drilling and well work continue at a healthy pace. Having said that, BP recently announced that they are going down to two rigs from six. And I expect other operators will slow down as well. Some new activities are going to happen, but again, at probably a cautious pace. Blue Crest and Fury will be pursuing new developments at Cosmopolitan and Kitchen Lights in Cook Inlet. Armstrong will be doing something with the Repsol discovery on the North Slope. And what each of these activities will ultimately look like remains to be seen and depends heavily on oil price. The next slide, ALGCC staffing needs. we've always had a tough time filling our engineering and inspector vacancies because we compete with the industry that we regulate for the same talent pool. And in the downturn in oil price, the one silver lining to that cloud is that some people have freed up and we filled our inspector vacancies and our final engineering vacancy. And we did have one inspector retire earlier this year, and we were considering whether or not to replace him. We're going to wait and see what happens with industry activity, because if Cook Inlet activity remains low, we won't have enough for that person to do. We have three people on the slope at all time, and we have housing for three people, so we couldn't put somebody else up on the slope. So we'll have to wait and see. The only other vacancy we have right now is for our public commissioner, as I mentioned before. Moving to the next page, hydraulic fracturing regulations. We spent a lot of time over the last few years updating our hydraulic fracturing regulations and making them easier for people to find and understand, and we went through several hearings and feel like we landed on a very good set of regulations. With all the bad press the fracturing has been receiving in the last few years, the feds have been threatening to take over hydraulic fracturing regulation in any state that cannot demonstrate that it has adequate regulations in place. So that was one of the drivers behind our updating of our regulations. Another was that there were changes in technology. And the third one was that we just wanted to make it easier for the public to understand that we did regulate and what we did. So in 2015, we moved from enacting to implementing our regs, and that seems to be going well. And we will continue to make sure that all goes well, and we will make adjustments to them if we need to. We also had a nationally recognized organization do a complete review of our hydraulic fracturing regulations, and the review came out in early 2016, and we got really good marks on it, and so that'll go a long way to help us with staving off federal overreach. And the feds have announced that they're going to be regulating hydraulic fracturing on federal lands, and that's going to have an implication for us in Greater Moose's Tooth. So we're going to work with the BLM folks to try to get primacy or do something to allow us to do the regulation for them and not have duplicative. Next page, BLM legacy well cleanup. You guys have heard me harangue about that a number of times, and you guys have been also helpful in raising this up to Congress's attention. And BLM now is into the process of spending the $50 million that Congress allocated to them. They're going to get, at the end of this season, they'll have what I think are the worst stinkers cleaned up, with one exception. And that's mainly, that one exception is mainly surface problems. But the really good news is they started work on ICO Bay number one, which was known as the Whistling Well because it's been leaking hydrocarbon gas for years. They started work on it in their initial prep work. They were able to seal the leak, so it's no longer leaking. That'll make plugging it safer and less complicated. And when they've spent the $50 million, there'll still be lots of work left to do, but at least the worst messes will have been addressed. All right, next slide, North Slope gas offtake allowable. I had two or three slides on that, but I think you guys are all aware of what we decided and where we go on that. So rather than go into all of that, I'll just go skip the next slide and go to the summary of the rulings. And I won't read that, but if anybody has any questions about that, that's what they are, and I would be happy to answer them. And, of course, we've got some triggers in our rulings that allow us to review progress in several areas, and if the progress isn't made, then we'll revisit the rulings. So as I say, that's not there, it's a promise that we make sure that the decision that we've made earlier last year stays, it's the right one when the time comes to produce the gas. The next page, Point Thompson Cycling Startup, that should be starting soon, and we'll be looking closely at that to make sure that it gives us adequate information to affirm the decision that we made on allowing Point Thompson gas to be sold. The next page is the importance of ALGCC staffing. I'm not going to give an overview of this. I'm going to do the whole thing because that was the main reason, I think, that you guys asked me to come testify. So that one, the ALGCC has a small and highly technical staff that makes important geologic and engineering decisions every day. Each day we have to answer questions such as these. Is the proposed procedure for drilling this well or working on this well safe? Does it use good oil field practices to ensure that hydrocarbons won't be wasted and people in the environment won't be in danger? Will this production plan ensure greater ultimate recovery of the valuable oil, gas, or geothermal resources it aims to extract? Will operation of this well in this manner create a threat to fresh groundwaters? Will the proposed variance from our rules still meet the protection requirements intended? Being fully staffed with engineers, geologists, and field inspectors is critical to addressing timely all of the issues that we face daily and ensuring that we're answering all these questions properly. The statutes provide that we have three commissioners and that these commissioners have very diverse but relevant qualifications. As commissioners, we make the final decisions on all of those questions that come before our staff. That's why one of us must be an experienced petroleum geologist, one must be an experienced petroleum engineer, and the third must have knowledge and skills relevant to the oil and gas industry, and specifically to the parts of that industry that we regulate. And that's just simply so that we can make those decisions properly. Our public seat has been vacant for over a year. Although Dan and I have continued to run the commission without a third member, it has not been easy, and some of our critical work has been slowed. And as you guys know well, when we are delayed, the industry is delayed, and when the industry is delayed, revenues to the state of Alaska are delayed. A quorum of two commissioners is required for every decision. With only two commissioners in place, whenever one of us is gone, the commission cannot act. Therefore, both Dan and I do everything we can to remain accessible even when we're away. For example, while arranging and attending my mother's funeral in Texas, I was responding to many phone calls and emails so that commission work could continue. And since I first wrote this up, Dan's mom passed away, and he was having to do commission work while at her deathbed with her. And he's going to go down to her funeral later this week, and we're trying to get staff to rush work so that he can attend her funeral in peace. But there's no guarantee. If we need him for a decision, we'll call him. While he was also, while he was out with her, we had to postpone a hearing that was critical to Hills Corp in a decision that would allow or not allow them to move forward on some important well work. As another example, we have a pending adjudication before us that the operator has requested that we not conduct without a third commissioner, and we do everything we can to honor reasonable requests relative to due process, so that decision has been delayed for going on a year now. On a positive note, Dan and I tend to see eye to eye, so we haven't had any disputes with just the two of us making decisions, but you know, maybe that's really not such a good thing. Maybe a fresh set of eyes looking at our issues would provide a perspective that we're missing. You know, I'm the baby in the group, and I've been here 11 years. So, finally, Dan's term expires in less than a year. The statutes stagger our terms so that, you know, one of us goes every 2 years, and that's specifically so that we'll never fall below two commissioners, which would render us incapable of acting on anything that comes before us, and so that we'll not be training two new people at once. And as time ticks on, we are at increased risk of having those problems. That concludes my testimony, and I'll gladly answer any questions you guys might have.
Thank you, Commissioner Forrester. I did have some questions. You talked about the commissioner seat that's open being a public seat, and you cited the qualification is that person must have knowledge and skills relevant to the oil and gas industry. So the skill set required is rather a high bar. True?
That is true. Because, you know, there are a lot of people who know something about the oil and gas industry, but it really needs to be something that is relevant to what we do. If you, we had a commissioner appointee that wasn't confirmed last year. He was a great guy, but he didn't know anything about what we do. And, you know, that puts a strain on the staff. It puts a strain on the commissioners. And it makes it difficult for him to make meaningful decisions.
Thank you. So I'm going to ask you a couple of questions because should an appointment be made before we adjourn, this committee, of course, would probably be interviewing that person. So I believe the expression is the individual should have, air quotes, downhole experience. In other words, experience or understanding of what's happening beneath the ground.
It should be that and or relevant oil and gas law experience. A qualified candidate might be an attorney in the private sector who represents a lot of oil and gas companies. And he wouldn't have downhole experience, but he would hit the ground contributing because he would be able to help us with all of our legal questions.
Great. This is a full-time job. Is that true, Commissioner Forrester?
Yes, it is.
All right, and consequently, it is a paid position.
Yes, it is.
Okay. Thank you. I know that the governor is diligently looking for someone to fill that empty commissioner seat, and we're very hopeful that that will happen before this session ends. Are there further questions for Commissioner Forrester? Senator Michicki.
Thank you, Kathy. Commissioner Forrester, it's good to hear your voice. One follow-up on Senator Giesel's question. The exposure of having an inexperienced commissioner in this case is that it would be relatively easy to convince them. Those with technical expertise would have an easier time convincing them, perhaps, of making a decision that's not in the best interest of the state of Alaska. Would you agree with that?
I would agree with that. I would also say that an inexperienced commissioner would slow the staff down in making recommendations and evaluating things and you know, doing the things that we count on them to do in a timely manner every day, because the staff and the commissioners would be spending a whole lot of time explaining things that should already be known.
Follow-up, Senator Machicki.
Yeah, thank you. Actually, a second question. You had some staff shortages here that were creating a backlog. Just wondering how what the status is right now of your backlog and if you feel like you're able to keep up with your current staffing level.
Senator Machicki, through the chair, I apologize. I haven't been following the polite protocol. We were able, that's one of the silver linings in this cloud of low oil price. Some good people have come available. We filled our one engineering position with a fellow who has hit the ground contributing in a big way. And we filled our last inspector vacancy late last year. And unfortunately, one of our experienced inspectors retired early this year. However, with eight inspectors and a slowdown in work, we're keeping up. So we're going to take a hard look at whether or not we should fill that ninth inspector vacancy. It's good to have because oil prices are going to rebound and things are going to get busy again. And so we're hoping not to lose that vacancy, but we're not sure we're going to fill it yet.
Very good. Thank you, Commissioner. I see no further questions, so I thank you for joining us today. I appreciate also the attention you've paid to cost savings and not coming all the way to Juneau to update us on the Commission's work. So thank you very much, Commissioner Forster.
You're welcome. I have to confess that I must have been here too long. I actually look forward to seeing you guys, and I'm really disappointed that I wasn't able to come.
Well, we look forward to seeing you, Commissioner, as well, but travel restrictions prevail. So thank you very much for the presentation and update.
Thank you all.
Next, we're going to move on to Senate Bill 163. Senate Bill 163 was last heard on March 7th. Today, we will hear from various stakeholder groups in invited testimony. Committee members, I am going to ask each group to testify, and hopefully we'll be able to get all of our questions answered with allotting about 10 minutes per group. So, we're starting out today with the Yakutat Tlingit Tribe, and let me see here, we've got written comments. Every committee member should have those actually from last week. We're going to hear from President Victoria Demert and Council Member Ryan Sensmeyer. And those folks are both online.
They're here in person.
Oh, pardon me. Please come forward. Please come forward. This must be Council Member Raymond Sensmeyer. Welcome. And Victoria Demert is?
She wasn't able to make it today. She'll be here, I believe, on Wednesday.
All right. Yeah. Great. Thank you. And the Yakutat Tribe has provided us with a handout, committee members, so if you want to pull that up. So welcome, Mr. Sensmeyer, if you would introduce yourself for the record and give us your testimony.
Thank you. My name is Raymond Sensmeyer. I was born and raised in Yakutat, and I'm here to testify on Tier 3 water designations and what process that goes through. Thank you. Yes, I'd like to thank you. I know you're all very busy, and but I've come here to thank you for this time to speak from my heart on behalf of the Tier 3 status of the four lands of Yakutat. I am a member who represents Yakutat on the Transboundary Commission. Many mines in Canada are at the headwaters of fishing rivers. One is the Alsac, 40 miles from Yakutat. The four lands, according to the scientists, Park Service, Fish and Game, the Tongass National Forest, described the four lands as the most pristine, cleanest waters of drinkable water quality in Alaska and the nation. And there are approximately 90 streams with all five species of salmon, as well as char, cutthroat, Hooligan, seals, and sea lions. And so I bring this to you. It is, there's no controversy as far as seeking this designation is concerned. This area is also covered with old village sites, old summer fish camps, shamans' graves, and the bones of our ancestors. And I'm going to digress just for a moment, because I usually do this. As you can see, I am a veteran. I respectfully ask all that have served to please rise and give yourself a hand for a job well done. And if there are any veterans in the house, would you please indicate so?
Welcome home, brother.
Thank you for your service. I appreciate
Thank you so very much. I appreciate that. I served in Vietnam for two tours, fighting for our country. It haunts me still. I suffer from PTSD. I now find myself fighting for our country once again. Those who have been in a combat situation, usually two men in a foxhole, ask each other, "Do I have your back?" And I ask my buddy, "Do I have your back?" And I guess what I'm asking you as a panel and the people of ACTAC are asking, are pleading, do we have your back? We ask not for us, but for the ones to come, our grandchildren and their grandchildren and your grandchildren. And last, I would say, let all of us who are gathered here today put our minds together and see what life we can make for our children.
Thank you very much for your testimony, Mr. Sensmeyer. Questions? Mr. Sensmeyer, if you could wait for just 1 second. Any questions for Mr. Sensmeyer? Seeing none, I guess you're off the hook.
Oh. Can I have a drink of water?
Of course you may. Absolutely. No problem. Thank you very much for taking the time to be here today.
Thank you.
I appreciate it. And again, thank you for your service.
Thank you so much.
Representative Chris Thompson is here. Is that true? Oh, he was. He left. Okay. I just wanted to recognize him if he was. Next, we're going to go here in the room to the Haines Chamber of Commerce. And presenting on behalf of the Haines Chamber of Commerce is Deborah Schnabel. Schnabel? Schnabel? Welcome. Thank Welcome,
you.
Deborah.
Thank you. My name is Deborah Schnabel. I'm the Executive Director of the Haines Chamber of Commerce. These comments have been approved by the Chamber of Commerce. I have lived in Haines for 63 years. The mission of the Greater Haines Chamber of Commerce is promotion of economic growth that contributes positively to the quality of life in Haines. A household survey that was undertaken in 2011 by the McDowell Group as a basis for developing our 2025 comprehensive plan concluded that 72% of Haines residents rate the quality of life as very high. 66% named natural beauty and outdoor opportunities as what they liked most about Haines. Haines is a community in transition. Our century-long economic history includes simultaneous operation of four salmon canneries, growth and the demise of Porcupine, a mining town supporting over 5,000 people, and a post office, simultaneous operation of two sawmills manufacturing wood products for export, a cruise ship schedule that brought 3 to 4 vessels into port weekly, seasonally. So Haines is a typical Alaskan community that has prospered or not, depending on resource extraction, technological overhauls, global market conditions, and politics. Today's demographics describe a community of retirees, craftspeople who renovate or construct their homes, small business entrepreneurs, tour operators, fishermen, and healthcare providers. So the best use of our natural resources has been a subject of debate in Haines since statehood. Indeed, much of Haines' economic history has been decided by the state because of land granting by the state for funding the Mental Health Trust and the University of Alaska. The state owns and manages 32% of all land in the Haynesboro. The Haines State Forest and the Chilkat Bald Eagle Preserve fill out the inventory. The Haines State Forest, once an economic engine for a defining timber industry, is now being defunded by the state. The Chilkat Bald Eagle Preserve is still an economic development opportunity, with 77% of respondents supporting increased commercial use. To the extent that our economy is still resource dependent, the Chilkat River is the lifeblood of commerce. The Chamber views the nomination of the Chilkat River as a Tier 3 Outstanding National Resource Water, as specified in 40 CFR Part 131.12, as a strategy to direct energy away from mineral resource development in the tributaries of the Chilkat River and to focus energy on preservation of wild salmon stock for subsistence and commercial use and the development of recreational tourism. It's the politics of defining quality of life. Some would say that a Tier 3 designation is necessary to preserve cultural values, including subsistence lifestyles. It's necessary to preserve wild stock salmon fisheries. It's necessary to maintain a semblance of pristineness that attracts photographers, artists, and tourists seeking wilderness recreation. Those would say it's necessary because it's impossible to otherwise guarantee that there will never be a mishap or an accident that could introduce toxins or pollutants into the river, that it is impossible for a mining operation to create a method of waste disposal that would not pollute groundwater or a tributary of the Chilkat River directly. Those who support a Tier 3 designation can envision a healthy economy that restricts large-scale resource extraction to fisheries and an economy built on tourism. Those who do not support the Tier 3 designation believe that traditional resource development undertaken with modern methods and under the scrutiny of state agencies responsible for protecting a state's waters do not threaten water quality. They also think that a mining operation, specifically the Palmer Deposit, is a sort of economic development that would improve the quality of life because it would create jobs and open up more land. These people believe that there's adequate regulation in place to preserve water quality in the Chilkat River. Those who oppose a Tier 3 designation see it as an imposition on their lifestyle and a threat to potentially meaningful economic development. In the 2011 survey, more than 50% of the households supported potential economic development opportunities in, utilizing agriculture, value-added wood products, winter tourism, promotion of the Chilkat Bald Eagle Preserve, and large-scale timber harvesting. 50% of households supported large-scale mining such as the Constantine Mineral Deposit in the Chilkat Valley, which is the Palmer Deposit. Being for or against Tier 3 for economic reasons is only one aspect of this issue. The issue is more broadly political. Some think it would make government regulation of local life too far. We have been told in a Q&A session held by the DEC in Haines on February 22nd that any activity currently undertaken in state waters would be allowed to continue. But there is nonetheless concern that a Tier 3 designation would prohibit infrastructure development that may be deemed important to the support of subsistence lifestyles and outdoor recreation, such as boat launches, docks, and possibly even the operation of machines that raise turbidity levels in the river. The political aspects of the proposed process for designation of Tier 3 as outlined in SB 163 is of concern to our membership, and this was brought out in a recent membership survey conducted by the Chamber where we had 58 respondents. First of all, we asked, are you familiar with Tier 3 designation legislation? 98% said yes. Did you attend the DEC presentation on Tier 3? 43 said yes, 57 no. Interestingly, do you favor Tier 3 designation decided by the legislature or by the administration? 29% for the legislature, 40% for the administration, 31% undecided. Do you favor designating the Chilkat River as Tier 3? 43% yes, 54% no, 3% undecided. Governor Bill Walker's assessment for, quote, far-reaching consequences for economic development supports his opinion that the basis for a Tier 3 designation ought to be political and not scientific, As written, SB 163 calls for legislative action on the designation. Our membership favors slightly a scientific basis because the citizenry is very aware that votes on issues affecting local economies can easily be traded among legislators with different constituent loyalties. Another concern about SB 163 as written is that provision that any single resident may nominate a Tier 3 designation. Generally, a consideration of a designation of such, quote, far-reaching consequence ought to have a larger political buy-in at the time of application. It needs scientific buy-in, and nominating applications must be vetted. In considering the process for designating state waters as an outstanding national resource, the Chamber looks to the state constitution, that's Article 8, Natural Resources. The legislature does have constitutional authority for utilization, development, and conservation of all natural resources, including water, which is subject to appropriation with priority to prior rights and preference among beneficial uses and general preservation of fish and wildlife. Also, constitutionally, the legislature may provide for the administration and preservation of special use sites for enjoyment, use, and welfare of the people, as it did with the formation of the Chilkat Bald Eagle Preserve in Haines. The Constitution also provides that mineral rights hold a priority right for extraction. Nature offers us phenomenal choices that require good judgment and sometimes a crystal ball. Decisions have consequences. Reflecting on the potential impact of a Tier 3 designation seems similar to the impact the consideration of habitat for various species of wildlife had in the management of our national forests. A Tier 3 designation would change the course of economic development for Haines, but in what direction and the characterization of that economy remains the purview of those who remain to accept that challenge. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Deborah. Questions for Deborah? I had, well, one for sure. When DEC was there to do the briefing, did they talk about the impact if it was a Tier 3 designation it would have on fishing and use of boats in the river?
It was a question-answer, so mostly, quite honestly, I was not present for the first 15 minutes of it, so that might have been presented at that time. But I think mostly it was, and the DEC employee who handled it did an excellent job of managing what I'm sure you could imagine was a raucous meeting. She handled it very well. Mostly the questions came, as often they do, in the forms of demanding that somebody speak against what I already know. Tell me that what I know isn't right. And I think that she did a very good job of maintaining a level of statement like, we don't know the answers to these things yet at this time. We recognize that it could be an issue, but there weren't, because there is not at this time any known scientific data about this entire river system that we're talking about, it's hard to know what the Tier 3 impact would be because we don't have, what do you call that, the baseline. We don't have the baseline data. I'd say that.
So, interesting survey results from the community.
Yes, I should say it's a Chamber of Commerce survey. I spoke about two surveys in this. One of them was the household survey done by McDowell Group for 2011. That dealt basically, if that was, you're speaking to the broad questions of where do we want to go with the economy, that was that. Our survey was very specific to the Tier 3 designation. So which one do you want to know about?
Well, I guess I'll go with the second one because the question, as I understood it, and I took notes as rapidly as I can, which helps me remember to ask you if we could have your comments in written form to distribute. Certainly you're missing a couple members, too. I'm sure they'd like to read them. You said that 29%, I believe, of the chamber members supported the legislature making that decision. 40% favored instead the executive branch.
Well, I call it the administration, but I think we're talking about the bureaucracy, DEC, DNR, whoever the scientists are.
Yes. And I think that you implied, anyway, maybe you were speaking for the group, maybe not, that the DEC or the administration, the bureaucracy, would be less political.
Correct.
Because they would base their decision on science.
I believe that's true.
Okay. So I'll just throw back to you that many of us, at least sitting on this resource committee, base our evaluation of the things that come before us on the data and the science that's presented to us. I just throw that out as information.
Right. I know that in reading SB 163, it does provide for the development of a process, and I guess without hearing or knowing how seriously that's being taken, it's hard to, you know, to speak to it. I have heard that DEC is only maybe thinking of collecting the nominations and putting them forward as to the legislature without a vetting of the application or without creating baseline data for consideration. I can't speak to that because I wasn't here, but I had heard that that was the case. I think that attending the rest of the DEC meeting, the state is so large with so many different constituencies, and people, I think, are highly concerned about having a political body make a decision of such, you know, consequence. So in a way, it's almost like maybe we're not in agreement with the governor.
It's ill-defined yet what that process will be, yeah. But rest assured, this committee is looking at it carefully what kind of process we would like to see in place. Senator Michiki had a question.
Yeah, actually, to follow up on yours, Madam Chair, I thought that was fascinating because the majority didn't favor a Tier 3 designation, however, thought that the administration would be a better choice than the legislature. And I'm just sort of wondering what your question looked like, if it explained the some sort of a process, or in my view, just Senator Michiki speaking here, it seems that if it goes, if it were to go to a commissioner, it would likely have a scientific basis for the decision. However, the commissioner is appointed by a governor that has very real political ties. And if it goes to a legislature, you've got sort of this averaging of political feelings around the state. It's a much larger body. It seems to me that if a body of water should be designated, it seems like it would be more likely with a legislature, and that if it shouldn't be designated, it shouldn't really matter which body, if you know what I mean. And that can fluctuate fairly dramatically between, we've had the same commissioner for a while now, he's survived several administrations, but you could have a very political administration that has a particular tendency one way or another politically that may designate prematurely without sort of that deliberative process. Just wondering your thoughts, and if the folks in your poll had any chance to consider those.
The survey that we did came following the February 22 meeting, and we also distributed information that had been developed by DEC, you know, question-answer things and other documents that speak to existing regulations and that sort of thing. With all due respect to what happens in these hallowed halls and how you all make your decisions, I would say that Haines certainly has a section of the citizenry who really believe that there's an awful lot of exchanging of votes, that there's a highly political scene in the legislative process, and that somebody who lives in Holy Cross may not, ever having been to Haines, might be able or willing to trade that vote on whether or not the Chilkat River is a Tier 3 designation for something else that they may want, and they're part of the state. That happens. Does it not? Am I? Those things, I think people are concerned about that.
Follow-up, Senator Michiki?
It may happen with some things. It may happen with some lower-level things. I think the more important the issue, the less likely that's going to occur. So I...
Be a philosophical basis.
Right. I mean, I'm speaking for me, and I think most on this committee, that's on something of importance, that's simply not possible. I'm not
that's
going
encouraging to
trade
not.
A vote for... Right. So I... that can happen sort of on both sides, whether mm-hmm. it goes with the administration. I personally feel that a really sound process would be the data processed by the administration and forwarded to the legislature, because when you look at key issues like this, it's generally how we make most key decisions. And I have a tendency to believe the process works, but
that's well, thank you. I'm encouraged to hear that, and I will take that information back. I think that as most bills are written, they're skeletons, and it's up to somebody else to put the flesh on it. And I think that just in reading Senate Bill 163, there's not a lot of meat on the bones.
And I appreciate that comment, Deborah. Keep watching.
Thank you.
I will also add, following up on Senator Machicki's response to you, I've been here 6 years, and I have never traded a vote. I vote on what I believe is mm-hmm. the best thing for our state as a lifelong Alaskan. Senator Stoltz, a question.
Yeah, I know I could say a lot of things about some of the suggestions here, but I guess I won't, because I'm so confused about the political judgment from Haynes beginning in 2012. I'm just confused, so I'll leave it at that.
Thank you, Senator Stoltz. Deborah, thank you.
Thank you very much.
I don't see any further questions. Thank you. Let's see. The next in the room, we're going to be hearing from the Alaska Conservation Voters. Mr. Louis Flora is here. Welcome, Mr. Flora. You are the legislative liaison for the Alaska Conservation Voters, I believe. But if you would introduce yourself for the record and give us your comments.
Yeah, thank you. My name is Louis Flora. I'm the legislative liaison for Alaska Center for the Environment and Alaska Conservation Voters. I'm going to be reading off a prepared text, so I apologize for that. I kind of view it as like a security blankie or something when I'm talking to legislators.
It's a good idea, yes.
Chair Giesel, thank you for the opportunity to participate in this discussion today on Senate Bill 163. I appreciate the time that you and the committee are putting in to understand and discuss this bill. And I also appreciate the hard work that all legislators are putting in this session on our fiscal dilemma. ACV, it's ACE and ACV, but I'm just going to shorten it to ACV. We oppose Senate Bill 163 as it's written at this time. We support a clear and transparent process to designate outstanding national resource waters. And we've had some trouble with the acronym. It's ONRWs, honors, but I'm going to also call it Tier 3 waters, which is, I believe, another term that's used in the bureaucracy, and that's simpler. So we support the process, a clear process for Tier 3 waters under the Clean Water Act. We support an inclusive process that highlights local input, that creates compromise and a working relationship between stakeholders. And we are disappointed that Governor Walker would see fit, out of all the options, to punt the Tier 3 determination responsibility to the legislature. It is an important decision, designating a section of a water body as a national resource water, which protects it from new sources of water pollution. Establishing the legislature as the final arbiter of this big decision puts a lot of pressure on committee chairs and individual legislators. It also places the designation in a kind of chutes and ladders game, which some people and groups are better equipped to play than others. We recognize that the legislature could make Tier 3 designations. The primary problem that we see with having the legislature call the final shot on Tier 3 designations is that it creates a white-hot political debate instead of a stakeholder discussion. Additionally, a 90-day session is dominated by generally one or two or three major issues and may not provide enough time to fully and fairly vet and decide on a Tier 3 nomination. We believe that DEC, with input from ADF&G and DNR, would yield better results for Alaska in the long run and would foster a better public dialogue. We also believe that the Office of the Governor is powerful enough to absorb the shock of opposition from whomever is opposed to the final outcome in the designation or the non-designation. In the western lower 48, it's our understanding that all states have adopted some method of designating Tier 3 waters as required by the Clean Water Act. Only a small handful of states put the onus of approving a Tier 3 designation on the state legislature. Some western states, like Montana, that require legislative approval of Tier 3 also automatically designate all waters in national parks and protected areas as Tier 3 waters, which we don't see as likely in Alaska, given the, I mean, we'd be hopeful, but reading the political tea leaves, probably unlikely. Idaho requires legislative approval and has no Tier 3 waters. Other western states like Wyoming and Washington and Oregon leave the designation process up to their equivalent of a DEC. Per capita, there's a larger constituency for salmon and clean water in Alaska than any other state in the lower 48, so comparisons to any of these states are tough. ACV recognizes that Tier 3 designation might seem awkward in Alaska, where we do have a superabundance of high-value rivers, wetlands, lakes, and streams. However, there are numerous reasons why it's important to have a science-based, transparent, and inclusive Tier 3 process that allows Alaskans to seek these protections for important water bodies. For one thing, we keep breaking records. In Alaska and the U.S. and the world, 2015 is the hottest on record, largest ice retreat, earliest this and that. Climate change is going to change a lot of things for Alaska and water in Alaska. And perhaps the stress of low snowpack and increased water temperature on our fish habitat will engender more and more pressure to protect fish habitat from additional stressors. At some point likely soon, a whole lot of people might be looking for a whole lot of answers on how to protect our fish. A science-based determination process may be more appropriate than a legislative process as we begin to examine and judge the impacts of climate change on all of our waters and the need to protect or not protect them. I do not speak for the entities that have submitted Tier 3 applications to date. It is conceivable, though, that Alaskans will submit applications to protect water bodies as a response to perceived policy and decision-making shortcomings. Of course, we all have our own view of whether the balance is tilted too far one way or the other. ACV believes that many current permitting processes have structural deficiencies that prevent compromise or that inadequately protect our fish and water. For example, we have lost the Coastal Zone Management Program, which brought Alaskans to the table in major permit reviews. We have no ability to comment on temporary water use permits, which are used as a proxy for major industrial water rights. We have stripped public interest litigation to bare bones. We have consolidated public comment on oil and gas leases. We have halted reasonable water quality measures to prohibit wastewater mixing zones and salmon spawning habitat. We have rolled back a citizens initiative to make cruise ships not dump water pollution into state waters. We have no requirement for interagency consultation on major water withdrawal permits. We have no law in the books to prevent a dewatering of a salmon stream. Under the Clean Water Act, the state is not required to designate Tier 3 waters. It is only required to have a process in place for citizens to make nominations. There are various options for what that process could look like. ACV does not think that a legislative process is the right one for Alaska. Senate Bill 163 is merely a path to more shrill debate. Alaska is uniquely dependent on fish and clean water, so there's going to be a lot of noise surrounding this issue. From some of the previous discussion on Senate Bill 163, there appears to be interest in the legislature in mitigating against Tier 3 applications. It would seem that instead of creating a process where Tier 3 nominations dominate the legislative conversation, the Walker administration should use the tools at its disposal to build a public conversation around why Alaskans would seek Tier 3 nomination in the first place. To summarize in closing, Alaska is overdue for the adoption of a clear, inclusive, science-based ONRW process. While there is no requirement to designate waters, only to have a process, whatever process is adopted should be workable for the people of Alaska and allow them to make nominations and have the nominations considered. The decision should be science-based, inclusive, and transparent. ACV believes that the process makes the most sense to have DEC, the agency with the water quality and permitting expertise, be in charge of the decision. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Flora. Would you be willing to submit your written testimony?
Yes.
That way,
yeah.
Missing members can hear it also.
I have it ready right now, but I'll send it as soon as I do.
That'd be great. Questions for Mr. Flora? Yes, Senator Stoltz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. As I recall, it's the governor who is, in his original legislation, suggested the legislative branch, and I assume DEC would be responsible for really having the policy recommendations. Mr. Harig has been at the helm through three administrations, including this one, and has helped direct a lot of that traffic you said has been so inimical from Alaska. Why would you want to trust a dirty guy like him?
Through the chair, Senator.
Through the chair.
I think that he has a long familiarity with the process, and I think with this administration working together, he could create a fair process for analyzing the Tier 3 water nominations. And I think part of the issue now, I think Alaskans didn't know about Tier 3 waters before the governor introduced this bill, and now there's going to be a lot of more understanding and scrutiny of the issue. And as I said in my testimony, I think that administrative process where we base it around science and have stakeholders commenting, I think that builds a lot more cooperation and can bring Alaskans together in a larger way than potentially a partisan legislative debate.
Good questions. Further questions? Mr. Flora. Yes, Senator Michiki.
Louie, I was just looking at the list of states, and western states particularly, and their designated waters, and I think about the state of California, arguably the most environmentally active state in the union, and they have two bodies of water that are designated, last I checked, which seems interesting to me that they have a robust process in a state like California that has a state agency for just about, or 10, for just about every decision that has to be made that they've only designated two. I guess I'm just struggling a little bit with your logic. And the reason for that is I would envision a process where DEC, DNR, would make a recommendation to the legislature. And you have a body that changes slowly, but it changes. You got 60 seats. You have 60 seats and a governor that would have to sign, I would assume. That body changes slowly, but it's relatively consistent, really, right? It's really not a roller coaster ride. It represents how most Alaskans feel. And I think the body's been deliberative and effective, even if we don't all agree with every decision. But you really have the potential for dramatic swings in the administration. You have no idea who the next governor is going to be. It may be this one, maybe another one. It might just be some right-wing guy that decides that it's not going to happen under his watch. And that process, if it's encircled only within the department, you may not have the opportunity for those reviews. I think it's kind of a half dozen one. What's the saying?
Six to one, half dozen to the other.
Sorry, I've got a little bit of a cold, a little cloudy. So I don't know. I'm not sure that logic, and you may look at recent rulings or decisions by the legislature, and you may decide things are going one way today, but that's sort of the beauty of our system, is that if legislators are not responsive, they often go away, and they get replaced with other legislators that are more responsive. So I'm not sure, my mind is always open to discussing these things, but I'm just not sure I follow your logic. I think if it's the right decision, if there's a waterway that should be designated as Tier 3, I would think it would be successful with the legislature. And if it shouldn't be, the department nor the legislature would likely support it either way. So it's just a couple different ways of looking at it, I think.
Further questions for Mr. Flora? All right, seeing none, thank you very much for your testimony, and we look forward to having it in writing. The last invited testimony comes from the Alaska Miners Association. They have submitted written comment on March 7th. Executive Director Deantha Crockett is on the line. Ms. Crockett, welcome.
Thank you. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, loud and clear.
Wonderful. Well, thank you. For the record, my name is Deantha Crockett, and I'm the Executive Director of the Alaska Miners Association. And we are very grateful for the invitation to provide testimony today on SB 163. AMA is a professional trade association established in 1939 to represent the mining industry in Alaska, and today we're composed of more than 1,800 members that come from seven statewide branches. The statewide staff is based in Anchorage, but we've got branches in Denali, Fairbanks, Juneau, Kenai, Ketchikan, and Prince of Wales Island, and Nome. And we're an umbrella association that represents large mining operations, but also small family placer mines, coal, sand and gravel mining, and the vendor and contracting sector that supports the industry. SC-163 addresses the process in which an outstanding natural resource water, ONRW, is designated. The Federal Clean Water Act includes anti-degradation rules, the most stringent of which is called Tier 3. Any water body that is designated as an ONRW would fall under Tier 3 rules and cannot be degraded beyond the baseline conditions. And what this means is that any new activities or expansion of existing activities in the water body that would change the water quality in any way would be prohibited, even if the discharge could prove that it meets applicable water quality standards and fully protects fish, aquatic life, and other water uses. To this end, I have a white paper that outlines the implications of the Tier 3 designation on watershed uses that I'll submit to this committee with my testimony today. Designation of an ONRW and subsequent Tier 3 water... Yes?
Are you still there?
Yes, I am.
Okay, suddenly you cut out. You were saying...
Uh-oh.
It was just this last sentence.
Oh, great. What I said was I've got a white paper that outlines the implications of a Tier 3 designation on watershed uses that I plan to submit to you all with my testimony following this meeting. Designation of an ONRW and subsequent Tier 3 water protection would, without doubt, be a barrier to resource development, economic development, and some crucial municipal projects. Conceptually, the AMA would prefer that the state of Alaska request that Alaska be exempted from the provision within the Clean Water Act that requires the state to have a designation process in place. However, it may not be possible to secure this exemption, and in that case, AMA believes the best avenue in which the state of Alaska can establish a process in which water bodies can be nominated for ONRW designation is through an act of the legislature. Therefore, we submit the passage of SB 163 this session, provided amendments are made to ensure the process is credible and done in a way that truly evaluates water bodies with science and data prior to the pursuit of a designation. While there may be cases in which nomination of an ONRW is warranted, AMA believes the process and any designation could be used by some anti-development individuals or organizations to stop responsible development projects. To prevent this process from being used as a tool to stop the next mine, timber sale, fish processing plant, or oil and gas development, we propose the following amendments. Please note these amendments are cited in section in our letter to this committee dated March 4. 1. Language should be included in this bill to ensure that water of the state that is nominated for ONRW designation should absolutely not be managed as such until an act of the legislature confirms the designation. Actions and requirements to discharges that manage the water prior to an official designation would be inappropriate. 2. The bill should be specific in that nomination of a water body should be a specific segment of the water body and not extend to tributaries and other adjacent waters. Parties that nominate waters for ONRW designation must be required to be specific as to the portion of the water body that is being nominated, and designations cannot go further or be applied to any waters outside the intended designation area. Therefore, should the nomination be confirmed and designated by the legislature, DEC's management of the water body as an outstanding national resource water shall be limited solely to that portion of the water body designated by the legislature. 3. AMA believes the bill should include language to provide the ability for DEC to reject nominations that fail to satisfy specific criteria and requirements for information that the department would establish in regulation. And I think Ms. Schnabel used the word vetting, which is a great word to go about this process. In our March 4th letter, we provided an appendix to outline suggested criteria for any submission of an ONRW nomination. In an attempt to be brief, the summarized criteria and suggested requirements include information that proves the water body has exceptionally unique characteristics relative to other state of Alaska waters, including being in a pristine condition, largely absent of human sources of degradation, being of exceptional ecological, economical, or recreational significance, being an exceptional or rare example of its type, and accompanied by data that demonstrates these criteria. DEC NMC shall conduct a completeness review of all applications and be able to request additional information as necessary to process the application, even if it necessitates the nomination being held over to the next nomination period as outlined in the bill. DEC should have the authority to require reimbursement from the applicant for DEC's costs of processing an application, including the required evaluations and reports. DEC shall begin processing the application and the required evaluations and reports after a satisfactory reimbursable services agreement has been received from the applicant. DNR shall prepare a report, and please note, DNR, not DEC, shall prepare a report evaluating the land use implications of any water body proposed for Tier 3 nomination that DEC submits to the legislature. The report shall include the social and economic impacts arising out of any change in land use that would result from a Tier 3 designation. Before preparing the report, DNR shall also enter into a satisfactory reimbursable service agreement with the applicant. The final piece of criteria is DEC's final evaluations and determinations and findings regarding the water body or segment thereof shall constitute a final department decision that could be administratively appealed. The department shall not forward any water body nomination to the legislature until all administrative and judicial appeals have been resolved. And should there be an administrative and or judicial appeal, the decisions and records of that should be forwarded to the legislature at the time of decision. Again, these criteria are much more fairly described in our March 4th letter, and I'd be happy to redistribute these in more detail with my testimony today. Our first proposed change is to organize the timeline in which DEC collects nominations and forwards them to the legislature. We suggest language stating that within 10 days after the convening of each legislature, the commissioner shall transmit to the legislature for consideration a list of nominations and related material that were received by the department within the 24-month period preceding September 1st of the previous year. Nominations of ONRW water should be done constructively. Therefore, AMA believes the agency should start each nomination period with a clean slate, ensuring that previously nominated waters that the legislature declined to act on aren't forwarded to the legislature repeatedly. Requiring new nominations every 2 years will help to mitigate the duplicative and outdated nominations of waters already having been addressed as being inappropriate for designation. A list of nominations should only be forwarded to the legislature once per session. Nominations received by the agency after the September 1 deadline should be considered in the nomination period for the following legislature. Our last, and I promise this is the last, recommendation for SB 163 is that language be included that provides a mechanism in which the process can be reversed if the stream no longer needs Tier 3 protection. An ONRW designation shouldn't be a final decision. It should be made only if absolutely necessary with the goal of restoring the water body to a condition in which multiple uses can return to it. DEC and perhaps the legislature will need the authority and process to change the designation if and when applicable. So in conclusion, even with our lengthy comments and suggestions I've outlined today, AMA believes that SB 163 is at the start of a good bill with the potential to be good policy for Alaska. We are hopeful that inclusion of our suggestions will be incorporated into this bill. AMA greatly appreciates the opportunity to submit our comments for the record before your committee and stands ready to work on this bill with your committee and DEC to ensure the goals for water quality and economic development are not mutually exclusive. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Crockett. Questions for Ms. Crockett? Seeing none, that would be great if you... I'm sorry, Senator Matricki, did you have a question?
Actually, not for Ms. Crockett. I just have a general discussion point when we're through.
So nothing specific for you, Ms. Crockett. So you did submit your letter in writing. If there's that you mentioned that white paper, we'd be glad to receive that also. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. You had a comment, Senator Matricki.
Well, I do, Madam Chair. It's just on that discussion of legislature versus administration. And if you look, I mean, for those, I'm sure you all reviewed your packets. But so Idaho legislative designation, there are no, I'm going to call them Monroe's. How's that sound?
Or Tier 3.
Tier 3 waters. Montana is has a board. Board of Education, Environmental Review, they have designated waters within national parks and federal wilderness areas, but there are no Tier 3 waters outside. Oregon and Washington both have an administrative process both, I would say, are more environmentally active on water quality than folks in the state of Alaska. Neither have a single Tier 3 water in their states. Wyoming seems to be the only western state that has an Environmental Quality Control Council appointed by the governor that has, other than national parks and wilderness areas, they have 15 other waters plus adjacent wetlands that have been designated. So it's interesting because nothing today prohibits DEC from designating Tier 3 waters. But the governor made the policy choice, and it'd be interesting to know what his thought process was on that. I mean, he says that given the far-reaching consequences, the final authority of the designation should rest with the legislature and not with the DEC. Just my message out to the various groups that are concerned with the legislative process is there seems to be nothing that indicates that more waters would be designated through a board monitored process in western states. I see no sort of rhyme or reason about which way people go, whether it's the legislature or the administration that governs the process.
Thank you, Senator Machicki. And just to follow up on your thought, DEC did opine to us that looking at the Constitution, Article 8, it does call out the legislature shall provide for the utilization, development, and conservation of all natural resources belonging to the state, including land and waters, for maximum benefit of the people. Therefore, I believe that was the foundation on which the governor opines that it does fall to the legislative authority. So clearly different opinions about that. But we have the bill. Thank you to everyone today who testified. This was invited testimony today. On Wednesday, we're going to have public testimony, so folks can call in. I'll just let folks know now, usually when we have public testimony on these bills, we do limit the testimony to 2 minutes. We are very happy to receive the testimony in writing as well, so folks can call in, go to their local LIOs and call in. The meeting goes until 5, so that'll be the time constraint we're under. We're going to start the meeting looking at Senate Bill 172. So, you know, if you're letting friends and relatives know to call in, we won't be opening the meeting with public testimony. We'll be hearing Senate Bill 172, which is a shellfish hatchery bill. So that'll be the first one. On either of these bills, any members who have amendments they'd like to propose, I would welcome those, as we'll be looking at what committee members would like to do in terms of amending either one of those. So with that, that concludes our agenda today. Comments? Yes, Senator Stoltz.
Thank you. I'm getting trained here.
Yes, you are.
Nice housebroken.
That's good.
Yeah. Thank you, Madam Chair. I noticed the commissioners here. I know we're about ready to leave today, but there were some. I guess they were just assertions that we were going to be a partisan political body here. And I, before the bill leaves committee, is the commissioner going to be back before us and talk about the governor's motivation? And
absolutely.
Okay. That's
yes,
all I
yes.
needed to. That's. I just God forbid there's any politics going on the third floor, and I'd sure like to learn about them. And I'm always in the discovery process. Thank you.
Very good. We will have the commissioner before us. Any other questions or additions from committee members? All right. Seeing none, we'll stand adjourned then. Let the record reflect it is 5 p.m.